Welcome to the Post-Christian Podcast. Our goal is to reframe, simplify, and focus on our mission to make disciples in a post-Christian culture. We discuss reaching new people and raising up leaders while removing the barriers of churchianity. I'm Eric Bryant, one of the executive pastors at Gateway Church in Austin, author of Not Like Me, and resource provider at ericbryant.org. In this episode, I interview Andy Masters, a church planter and church planting coach in Northern Ireland, along with his wife, who's an amazing singer and performer, Dana Masters. All right. Well, I'm excited. It's good to see you two. How are you doing?
We're really good.
We're good. Someone asked me today, how's lockdown going? And I said, I can tell you how it's going in this moment because it changes every day.
Yeah.
You know,
so multiple times a day.
So today, right now, we're doing good.
Right now, we're good.
Well, and the two of you, you're in Lisburn, Ireland.
Yeah. Well, we're in the middle of building a house, actually, outside the city. So we moved out of the city 18 months ago.
Yep.
But the church that we lead is in a city called Lisburn. Yeah.
And tell us about what has lockdown been like there? Has it been more tight than other places? Is it adversely affecting people? What is it like in Ireland for folks right now?
I think we're in this odd place because we're in the north. We're in Northern Ireland, which is technically part of the UK, but we are an island with the Ireland of Ireland. And those are two governments who have responded very differently to COVID-19. And because there's so much, I work a lot down south, loads of people work down south. So you're sort of affected by both governments' decisions, aren't you? And so I feel like we're almost in this weird...
It's been pretty, so we're in week 9. They literally last Friday started to relax some of the restrictions. So we're now able to see people outside of the house. We have to do the social distancing thing, but literally everything stopped for 8 weeks. And I mean, there was at the beginning, there was some news stories of people not paying attention to what had been asked, but on the whole, like the whole country has really stopped, and people haven't really been leaving their houses or their gardens for 8 or 9 weeks, apart from shopping or working. So it's been like it has been really weird. If I've heard the word unprecedented once, it's like a million times, like the most overused word. But it's true.
It's true.
Nobody's really seen anything quite like it. But it does look like we're starting to unlock a bit at the minute. So. We'll see. The overall scale of coronavirus for Northern Ireland specifically hasn't been that bad in kind of comparison to the rest of the UK or places like New York or some of the other countries in Europe.
Like we were waiting for the peak to happen, and it happened over in England, but we've never actually gotten the big.
Well, we're gonna this week we'll probably hit 500 deaths for the whole country, which is still awful, but. You know, you put that into like the whole of the UK at the peak was seeing over 1,000 a day, you know, so it hasn't been the actual virus itself hasn't been too bad here yet.
That's good. I don't know if you guys know this, but Austin is the same size in terms of population as Northern Ireland.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So there's similar, you know, even in terms of the tragedy of COVID-19, the way Austin's been affected is different than Houston, different than Dallas even. But I know, Andy, you grew up in Ireland, and us about, because we, the three of us all knew each other in our days in Los Angeles at Mosaic. Yeah. And, you know, certainly ministry in that context has its challenges, but what is growing up, you know, like in Europe? Having an experience where it's a Christian nation, but there's a resistance to it, almost an inoculation against it.
You've got the kind of European thing, although the last couple of years of our politics has been fun too in terms of Brexit and everything like that, which is affecting us. But I was born in 1985, so I was born, I don't remember necessarily loads of this, but I was born in kind of what's known over here as the Troubles, where essentially a civil war going on. So certainly when my earliest memories were police and army checkpoints on the streets. My mom tells a story of us being on holidays in the south of England whenever I was very young, and two army helicopters flew across the beach that we were on, and all of the children on the beach stopped to kind of go, wow, look at these helicopters, apart from my brother and my sister and I, because that was an everyday occurrence for us. I mean, there would have been army helicopters flying around the skies every day. That was totally normal. So you had this kind of weird thing for us growing up where you had, and in some ways, this isn't quite true, but how the Troubles in Northern Ireland gets reported often is they talk about it as a religious civil war. So it was Protestants against Catholics. That's not actually true, although the two political ideologies were aligned in that way. So you had Unionists versus Nationalists or Loyalists versus Republicans, and the Unionists, Loyalists would have been from a Protestant tradition, Republican Nationalists from a Catholic tradition, but there wasn't much religion involved in why actually things weren't working. It was a political issue, not a religious one. So you have the backdrop of this religious shadow here, where particularly in Ireland, where a lot of people look at it and go, geez, that's caused us so many problems, I'd rather just not have that. Yeah. Which is slightly different than what you get in some of the rest of Europe, where the mindset or the paradigm is a bit more like we've just outgrown some of the trappings of church and what comes with that, you know. So yeah, it was certainly an interesting time to grow up. Of course, I knew nothing other than what it was. It was just our normal. But, you know, I guess being a bit older, looking back on it now, having lived in the States and other places, there's aspects of life growing up here that I'm hugely grateful for, and other things that were, I guess, a bit challenging too, you know.
Did you grow up in a context of faith?
Not really. So neither of my parents would have said they were following Jesus whenever I was growing up. My parents separated whenever I was five, for 3.5 years. But during that time of their separation, my dad came to faith, and then they got back together and have been together ever since. And so whenever they got back together, church became a bit more of a normal thing for us as a family. And then my sister came to faith, and then my brother, and then I didn't actually come to Christ until I was 18. After high school. So, and then our extended family, though, there would be very little practicing pursuit of Jesus. In fact, there's none, you know. So aunts, uncles, wider extended family, there isn't really any of that. I remember chatting with one of my cousins who lives in Scotland a few years ago, and we were talking about our children doing a nativity play in school, and he genuinely asked me, what's a nativity play? Like, wow. You just no context, yeah. For having never in his life heard the Christian Christmas story. Wow. And that's it. 28.
He's about to get married.
Yeah, so he's like in his mid to late 20s.
Wow.
And you know, so yeah, no kind of context for church, faith, the scriptures. That's just not really in their worldview at all.
What helped your father pursue faith in this way? That sounds like very different than the rest of his family.
Absolutely. So his parents, my grandparents, both passed away now, but his dad, very intelligent man, serial entrepreneur, the height of his business career. I think he was running 9 or 10 very successful companies. He owned one of the factories that the DeLorean cars were made in. Yeah, so when DeLorean went bust, they owed him a lot of money. So he was very intelligent, and he had a conviction that he should send all of his children to Sunday school, because he, and we talked about this when we moved back here. They became really good friends of ours, and he was quite convinced that a biblical morality was the best way to live your life. And so he completely rejected the idea of God and would have said he was quite a convinced atheist. But he thought the morals, as per kind of what would have been traditional Orthodox Christian morals, he thought were really important. And so he sent all his kids to Sunday school. So they grew up with that. And then I guess when my parents were separated and all of the stuff of three small kids, not living with them. Life was really, it was a really challenging time, I think, for my dad. And that really, I think, was the catalyst for him to start to explore faith. And then he connected with a church near where he's living and had a, he would say, and we'll maybe get onto this a little bit later, he can't really tell you the time or the moment that he decided to follow Jesus, but he can tell you the kind of season of his life when he wasn't, and then the season of his life that he is. And he's an elder in a local church here now, and has really, you know, spent most of his the last 30 years of his life trying to follow Jesus as best he can, you know.
That's amazing. Well, and Dana, you and I, growing up in America, have had different experiences. You were in South Carolina, if I remember right.
I was, definitely, yep.
You have an Irish accent now.
Yeah. She's got a weird accent, though.
Americans say I have an Irish accent, and Irish people say, what in the world?
Where are you from? Wrong with the accent.
Well, what has your experience been moving from the States, knowing where we are spiritually? You know, certainly South Carolina, LA have their differences, but generally speaking, how would you compare what you see happening in Europe versus what you grew up with?
Well, one of the things that I remember clocking when I first moved here, 2008, was I didn't realize the pressure that I had sort of felt growing up. And it wasn't necessarily a bad pressure, but it was there. It was sort of weighing on me that my Christianity had to look a certain way and be very pristine, and not like in a biblically holy way, but it was just like a list of things we did not do. Mm. You know, when I was growing up, it was listening to what we called secular music or whatever. But, you know, even when I moved out to California, there was, you know, if people would like, you know, have a beer on the sly or something, you know, it was almost like those two things can't coexist. And one of the things I noticed first when it came to how people express their faith here, both Catholics and Protestants, is just some things that we used to sort of really give a lot of thought to. They never associated those things with what faith. Now, obviously, I think in every country, wherever you have any type of faith, you have people who are sort of super conservative about it. Like, we have what we call our teetotalers here and this, that, and the other, but it's not the main thing. Do you know what I mean? And so in some ways, it's not better or worse at all, but in some ways where I was in my life, I relaxed a little bit and focused more on other aspects of my walk with Jesus that I hadn't focused on. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. That's great.
The other indications that you're following Jesus, not just the what you don't wear, what you don't say, or what you don't drink or eat. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
That's great. Well, since 2008, have you been in the same church, same city?
So, same city. I started doing some work towards the end of 2008 with Presbyterian church, and then we actually planted the church that I now lead in our living room in autumn 2012.
Wonderful. So you planted this church. Yeah. What's it like to plant? How's that experience been? What's helped you connect with those who weren't connected to faith? Tell us about that for the two of you. What has ministry been like in that context?
Yeah, it's been a mad journey. Our daughter was 10 months old when we kind of officially launched the church. And then, what would that be, 8 months later, we had twins. and I was doing another full-time job leading a sort of leadership development agency in Belfast. So like, full-time job, three kids under 18 months, plus a church plant. It was a pretty intense season.
By the way, two kids born within 18 months, don't they call those Irish twins?
Yeah, so Irish twins is two kids in less than 12 months.
Oh my gosh. So you didn't quite get that, but you got the triplets.
No one here is impressed.
Yeah, no. we just did a load of them in the attendance.
We were at the Presbyterian Church. Well, you worked there. I was just attending for, was it 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Which I think actually was a really important part, looking back on what we are involved with now. Mm. I think we are a part of the Vineyard movement here in the UK, in Ireland. And I think sometimes those of us who are a part of sort of newer movements and newer sort of expressions of our faith, you accidentally get into this thing of like, ugh, this old stuff, like throw off the shackles of the old, and you know. And it was really cool to spend 3 years getting to know the families and the people in our city who we still know. Many of them we're still good friends with. Some of them actually come to Vineyard now, but whose generations have been brought up in this faith. And it was really, for me, I think, maybe you probably having grown up here were a bit more in touch with that. But for me, it was really important for me to be in that and to touch that and to not, you know, label it as this general thing over here, but to get to know the actual people who are part of our more traditional movements in Northern Ireland.
I think from a strategic point of view, and we didn't necessarily do it this way, but looking back on it, it was smart. We didn't do it necessarily intentionally,
smart
I guess.
Smart of Jesus. Yeah. It wasn't yeah.
But in terms of church planting in post-Christian context, I oversee church planting in Ireland now for Vineyard. And the way I kind of coach church planters on it and talk about it is it's really important in post-Christian people groups to think more in terms of planting your life than planting a church. Mm, and so, you know, you can't do the, like, you know, get a building, get a band, put out a banner and people are going to show up. It doesn't quite work that way.
They call that a cult.
So, yeah. So what really worked for us is when we actually started the church, we already had huge equity in the city. We knew people, there was a relational network already established. We had loads of friends who didn't know Jesus just because we'd been living there for a while. We'd been involved in a couple of community projects with the police and things like that. So we had into kind of some of the civic leadership stuff. And that really helped accelerate us when it actually came to planting, because there was a lot of that groundwork that needs done, which takes a long time if you just move to somewhere new. And people aren't necessarily familiar with like a new church. I mean, if you go to anywhere in Ireland, people have an opinion and some history with a mainstream, the media would call them here church, one of the mainstream denominations, the Catholic Church or Methodist, the Presbyterians or the Anglicans. Now they maybe have never been for 2 decades, but they have somewhere for that in their head. When you show up and you're not a part of one of those sort of main denominations, there's instantly some suspicion of who are you? What are you doing? Who told you you could do it? You know, like those types of things. Yeah. And so the time for us that we spent probably 3 years just doing life in a community before we planted really, really helped us. And that's, I think, great. Is a really, really important thing when it comes to connecting and trying to reach groups that don't have a grid really for what it is that you're trying to do. And I think that's really important.
That's good. What's other advice you give church planters in a post-Christian context?
Don't have 3 kids in 18 months.
While you're trying to plan.
Yeah.
No, that was...
I was very, very shaped by what we were doing together in LA. By how Irwin used to talk about this, of what's really, really important is to become a student of the culture that you're trying to communicate the gospel to. And what's really interesting is, like you just said, our whole country is the population of Austin. So most of the books and podcasts and conferences in the world have speakers and leaders and thinkers that are practicing in a culture that's vastly different to the one that I'm trying to lead in. And so there's just no shortcut to actually investing in becoming a student of the culture that you are leading in. And there are other people maybe doing other things in similar places that you can learn from and be inspired by. But I think it's just so, so, so important. I mean, for example, I've friends that lead really incredible churches in London and in some other really big cities and states and places like that. And I listen to their podcasts and I watch some of what they're doing and I'm thinking, oh, it looks so cool. The reality is my church is full of farmers, you know, like it's just, you know, so talking about the latest way to kind of slow brew coffee and that being an inn, it's just
nobody cares.
I mean there are some that care. Our youth pastor would absolutely disagree with what I've just said there. He's a total geek about coffee, but you know, that's an example of one of the things I had to learn early on, where I was trying to lead and sound and think like some of my friends that were doing stuff in London, and I'm in Lisburn, and Lisburn is not London.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the things I would say to people that are wherever you find yourself, you've got to become a student of that place. And
that's good.
That's really, really important.
That's good. Well, Dana, you still are one of my favorite singers. Aww. And loved when you would lead us. And you still sing. So tell us how you use that as part of how you're doing ministry.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because consciously that we haven't connected the two. I don't even lead worship at church anymore.
Like, not
often. It's been years since I was an integral part of the worship situation in church. And so that's freed me up to really explore where I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to be doing, which is actually really cool, because sometimes I find that in a lot of churches, and this is amazing because this would be amazing if sometimes I go, oh, I'm so jealous of that. But in a lot of churches, the husband's the minister, the wife is either the co-minister or leads the worship, but they have this sort of more cohesive and sort of pulled together life and ministry and this and the other. Whereas Andrew is leading Lagan Valley Vineyard. I go to Lagan Valley Vineyard and I love it, but I have a completely different job and a completely different call. And so that's what I've been doing for the last how many ever years. And I had to relearn, honestly, I think I had to relearn what evangelism meant. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think that by the time I got here, I was so mixed up on what it meant to intentionally tell people about Jesus and share the life and the gospel of Jesus. And I'm still on that journey in that I'm allowing the Holy Spirit to sort of teach me that. So like one example is, you know, when I'm touring, I'm off touring, I'm a bit of an introvert. I feel like I'm the world's worst Christian and the world's worst evangelist anyway. And I had a friend, a bandmate who was touring with me. We were the only two women. And something was going on in our family. And I was sort of, I love to talk to people that, you know, I tell them stuff, they tell me everything. And we got really close that way. And one day we were on a bus and I just thought, I should ask her if I can pray for her. And for the first time in my life, it wasn't like I'm going to come across as an idiot or she's going to think. It was just like, look, this is who I am. Like if she doesn't want it, she doesn't want it. It's cool. But I've not met someone who will not take prayer when they are desperate. Prayer to anybody. You know what I mean? So I just was like, hey. And I didn't even offer to pray for her. Then I said, you know what? I'll be praying for you and your family. And then I just got this little nudge from the Holy Spirit. And I thought, Do you want me to pray now? And she said to me, I was waiting for you to ask me.
Wow.
Right? So I prayed for her then, and that was fine. So then we would go, we would do these shows, and we would be up late. And Eric, I'm like, I hate staying up late. I'm so exhausted. So I'm already grumpy before the show, knowing that I'm gonna be exhausted. And I remember the day she was like, hey, do you think maybe we could pray before the show together? And I was like, I should have thought of that.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So we did that. And long story short, she came to faith. Like she, you know, met Jesus and is invited Jesus into her life and the Holy Spirit into her life. And I think that's one of those things where I had to realize Jesus is at work. He's doing stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
And
didn't she, she came and stayed with us.
Yes, she did.
Didn't we do share communion with her?
No, you want to do. Well, so she would have, her only understanding of faith is from the Catholic Church. That's because she's a musician and she used to like be a part, like their choirs and stuff. But she, her understanding was she didn't meet the regulations to take communion in the Catholic Church. But when they did it, she said her heart just longed.
When she was
I can't
younger.
Remember. Mm. I can't remember the wording she
used. We talked. That sort of just reminds me. We actually talked about the next time she comes, we have to do that with her because
that's great.
She's never felt like she's been able to
sit at the table of God.
You know.
So, wow.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, that's
a beautiful
example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I do think that's part of what even your description of effectively church planting is, it's about relationships. It's about building life with people around you. And whether you're a singer, whether you're, you know, a coffee brewer or, you know, or pastor, it's, do you have relationships with people? Do they talk to you about meaningful things? And are you there to talk to them about meaningful things?
That's it. Well, it's funny because when we used to live in Lisburn, we had a house in Lisburn, and we lived next to a couple who had a couple of children, and we just became really good friends with them, really, really good friends with them. And intentionally, Andrew was a minister, and we're always wary, like, people thinking we're becoming friends with them because we're like, come to church, you know?
Fastest way to end a conversation at a dinner party is, so what do you do, pastor? Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
You know. We lived next door to each other for nearly 10 years. And for the first time, actually, it's making me think of the book you wrote, Peppermint Filled Pinatas.
Mm-hmm.
And we did life with them. We became really good friends. All of our celebrations were together.
Birthday parties, kids' birthday parties, the whole thing.
The greatest time. One time we invited them to church, and it ended up being like the worst church service we ever had.
No.
We tried to do like this fun Christmas family thing, and it was chaos.
It was
like,
really bad.
I'm surprised.
Oh, no.
Hospital.
Yeah, my mom came and she's a retired teacher, and she basically told me afterwards that it was the most ridiculous thing she'd ever seen and how we thought we'd be able to keep kids in, you know. Anyway, it was bad,
but it was horrible. So we were so embarrassed, and the next time they came to church,
so what happened was, then this would be about 3 years ago this September, I got a phone call from our worship pastor, because he'd met them because he'd been at parties and things like that, and I was down at church getting things set up and stuff, and then I'd come back up home to get Dan and the kids, and the worship pastor phoned me and said, your neighbor here. And I said, I'm up at home, tell him I'll be down in a second, you know, thinking that they were there to see me about something,
like the house, something,
like something's gone on or they whatever, and he went, no, they're just here. And I said, I don't know what do you mean. And he said, they're just sitting at the back on the right-hand side, like they just decided to come to church. So it was really, honestly, like, this is like, maybe should be in a book of how not to do evangelism. So they came, we didn't, like, I was like, man, what do we do now? Like, I don't want to be like, hey, what's going on? You know, we're just kind of, so we just didn't really say much. We just kept doing life. They kept coming to church. We never talked about church. And then at Christmas time, the lady, walking the kids in the park with Dana one day.
We were all at the park. She's like, I have to tell you something. It was so serious. And I thought, have I offended this lady? What have I done? What have my kids done in her back garden or something? We sat down, the kids were playing, and she started crying. She's like, I gave my life to Jesus last night.
Wow. That's amazing.
And so that was incredible. And
but her thing was, this was interesting, because we asked, like, then got into the chat of like, what happened? And she said, I would come to church and I would sit in the back and cry through the whole thing. Because nobody ever told me I didn't have to be perfect for Jesus.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, I'm really grateful for these stories and the lives you've impacted. Thank you so much for taking some time and sharing with us. And just keep up the great work you guys are doing.
So good to connect again, Eric.
Yeah, it's great to see you.
Great to see you guys too. Thanks for joining us on the Post Christian Podcast. More resources available at ericbryant.org.